Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, January 17th, 2024. Wow. On 91.7 FM WHUS Doors. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprouts. You can also check out my Facebook page and Instagram at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. All right, so once again, Happy New Year to you. I hope that the first half of January went well for you. We've been having weather up and down. Today it's a gorgeous day, but it's quite cold. And I learned something interesting, that the fact that it's all of a sudden gotten really cold is not necessarily evidence that global warming is not really a thing, that it can be because of global warming. The problem is that the ice caps are melting, and because the ice caps are melting, there's less cold air way up north, so you have a weaker jet stream. I'm not sure how melting ice caps equals a weaker jet stream, but that's one of the things that happens. So you have this ring of air that blows around the top of the world, and when it's weaker, it is unable to hold in the cold air that's up north, so it seeps down south. So now we're getting these major colder temperatures. I mean, we're having cold weather. It's not single digits here, but it's, you know, we had teens this morning, which you could get in January. I mean, you could get single digits in January here. That's been my experience over the years of living in Connecticut. But what, you went out this morning and it was what, in the teens, right? It was real cold.
18, yeah.
Yeah, it was 18 degrees. And right now it's probably in the 20s, I think. Which you're supposed to have that. And one of my favorite things about the real cold weather is supposedly it freezes the ticks. Please freeze the ticks. Please freeze all the ticks. I'm tired of the ticks. I'm tired of having an illness that was brought about by ticks. And as much as I want to help you all with your tick-borne illness, I'm not super thrilled with one of the ways I have to learn how to help you is going through it myself. However, one of the best things that can happen for you is if your friendly, wise naturopathic physician doesn't die, but also gets an illness that you are struggling with, because we get inside of it and we get a firsthand experience of what it feels like, and we get to treat it, and we get to figure out how to treat it day by day and inch by inch, and you benefit from that. I mean, as much as I can't stand it because I don't feel good, I benefit from it too because I learn. So that's a great thing. So in that sense, I'm appreciative of it. I just hope that at some point I get to feeling good, because if I don't feel good, that's not as helpful, because I need to figure out what I did to make myself feel good and then communicate it to you. And then, you know, and support you who are listening right now, listening or even watching me right now. And also, of course, if you should decide to come into my practice, I'll be able to help you better that way as well. And there are all kinds of resources. So today what we're going to talk about is, I'll tell you where I'm at the moment, and we're going to talk about detox. And detox is a great thing to talk about at the beginning of the year. A lot of people decide to have dry January, for example. Dry January being, have you ever done dry January, Ron?
No.
Do you know what it is?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what is it?
It's not taking an alcoholic beverage during the month of January.
Yeah, and I'm not doing that.
No, you broke that one last
night. Oh, yeah, I sure did. Yeah. Yeah, because drinking a lot is not a problem of mine.
No.
So I get to have a drink whenever I feel like it. And because whenever I feel like it is usually once a month or less. I felt like it last night, so in went the Baileys. Baileys might not be the best choice for when you're having Lyme disease, but my goodness, it tasted so good. And one of the things that happens is I'll buy Baileys, and it will sit in the cabinet for months, years even, and then we go to have it, and it's bad. Because I guess Bailey has a bit of a shelf life. So, but last night, pardon me, I had some amazing Baileys, and I was very happy with it, while Ron and his friend Christian enjoyed some, what, Litchfield bourbon.
Yep.
And I tasted it, and I did the usual thing I do when I'm tasting bourbon, which is I went, one, this is wasted on me, and two, it reminds me of Grandpa Marty. And Grandpa Marty was a, he owned a liquor store in Hempstead, Long Island, and he then became a liquor rep. So our joke about Grandpa Marty was, it's always 5 o'clock somewhere. And when I would go to their house when I was a kid, they had a great big glass cask that sat on the floor. And if I would smell the inside of it, it smelled like random bourbon. It must have had some kind of bourbon or scotch or whiskey or rye or something in it. And I can't tell the difference. I mean, I suppose one day, Ron, you should set out some shot glasses and give me an education. What do you think?
Oh, I could do that, but I don't know if we could. I'd have to have a couple people here to pick you up off the floor.
Well, if you pour in a drop, I mean, I'm only going to have a sip. I'm not going to take the whole shot. I'm just going to take a sip.
Okay.
And you pour out some Litchfield and some Jefferson and some Woodford, and I'll see if I can tell the difference. And you can guide me through the differences as you see them as well. That would be fun.
Yeah.
So let's do that. Okay.
Yeah.
So meanwhile, so what's going on with me? So I am continuing on my path with Buhner herbs. Today I'm feeling pretty good. At this minute I feel pretty good, and that's how it goes. I kind of feel up and down. Today I started out feeling pretty good. Yesterday I woke up with sludge brain, and I think it's because I had a hard week last week. I had two very busy days in a row where I worked, you know, like 8 to 11 hours. And without a break. And then Saturday, I did my Saturday running around and chores and things. So I was exhausted yesterday. The other thing that I did, you see, I may not have mentioned this. So my special state of the art Lyme disease test results came back. And I was very grateful to Mariah Hinchy, my naturopathic friend over in Hebron, for sending me the results. And, according to that test, I do in fact have Lyme disease, with not a surprise. And I also, and Mariah, I'm very proud of her because she said, with all of your tremors that you get, I suspect that you have Bartonella, which is cat scratch disease. So Bartonella quintana specifically. Although she didn't say specifically which one, because there are a number of strains of, or number of genuses of, number of species of Bartonella. And so Bartonella is the genus, then there's a number of species. And the two big ones that we test for are Quintana and Hensolet. So I came back for Hensolet, and that's the most common one, and that's cat scratch disease. So you can get it from being scratched by a cat, because the bacteria lives in cat feces, and then cats, of course, scratch in their... if they're using a litter box, they scratch the litter box. And if they're outside, they scratch over their feces to try to cover it up. It's an instinct that, many animals have. Dogs and cats both do it. So they can get their claws into the feces, and then there can be Bartonella on it. And then if the cat happens to scratch you, it can transmit Bartonella Hensolet to you. Thus, cat scratch disease. So I'm thinking of getting a Ted Nugent t-shirt. Ha ha ha. Anyway, but I probably did not get cat scratch disease from a cat, because I haven't been around a cat in a very, very long time. Because, you know, when you go to the farmer's market or the store or out in the world, you encounter dogs all the time. And so I definitely have encountered lots of dogs and played with them and pet them. And Craig, shout out to Craig, who says that he's had cat scratch from both ticks and cats. So interesting. My assumption is that, you know, the ticks are the gift that keeps on giving, and I got a twofer with whatever tick bit me. And I am suspicious that I got bitten this summer, that this is not, I may have had chronic Lyme buried for a long time. In fact, I probably did, but I think I had a new bite this summer because I was fine for a long time. And then I began to be symptomatic. Craig also mentions that when he got scratched by the cat and got Bartonella, he had a worse illness. So that's kind of interesting. All right. So very proud of Mariah for sensing that I had cat scratch disease because of my my symptoms. Usually when you had, so what Craig says is all his lymphatics were swollen. And that is a very, that's very characteristic of cat scratch disease. I don't particularly have that. I mean, I keep checking my lymph nodes. Nothing exciting is going on. So I was clearly exposed to it, but, I mean, something is affecting me neurologically. It's probably a combination of the Lyme and the Bartonella. But I don't particularly have lymphatic. I have a little lymph node right here in my neck that tends to go up and down, but I also have dust and mold allergies, and this is the good time of year for experiencing that. So, so one of the things to note is that Bartonella will give you big swollen lymphatics. So if you don't feel good and you're not having like a respiratory illness and you are having joint pain and body aches, and you have swollen lymphatics, Bartonella is something to consider. But I don't particularly have swollen lymph nodes at this point. So that's kind of good. And the other things that Bartonella can characteristically produce is it produces a rash. It's often horizontal across your back. It can be other places in your body. They look like stretch marks, and they look like purple stretch marks, and they do or they don't blanch. I think they do blanch, yeah, because of what Bartonella does to the circulation. Whereas if you have stretch marks that are just from gaining weight, those, if you press on them, they don't blanch. They blanch meaning when you press on them, they turn white. And a Bartonella stretch mark rash will blanch. You'll press on it and it'll turn white. And then you take your finger away and it reperfuses and becomes purple again. And they'll be in strange places. And when I've seen them, they'll be across somebody's spine. And I have a patient who's a young man who's slender, and he had this like 4 striae across his back and nowhere else. And it was just a strange place to have them. And when I pressed them, they did blanch. And, you know, they don't make sense as a place where you would get stretch marks. I mean, you usually get stretch marks on your tummy, on your tuchus, sometimes on your arms. But this was an odd place to get them, and he didn't have them anywhere else. So that could have been Bartonella. So what do you do about Bartonella? Bartonella particularly, you do somewhat different antibiotics and somewhat similar antibiotics to Lyme disease. Bartonella, you often get offered, you do get offered doxycycline. You also might be offered rifampin, when rifampin is a pretty intense drug. And rifampin is a drug that's used for tuberculosis. So you can get offered that. And when you take rifampin, you have to get regular eye exams because it can cause oculotoxicity. So you have to be continually getting checked for that. So you can be given rifampin, you can be given azithromycin, you can be given clarithromycin, and there's a few other drugs that you can be given. I am choosing right now to not take antibiotics. And my decision to not take antibiotics is supported by my colleague, Mariah. And the reason is, it's not because, oh, I don't want to do something unnatural. That's not why. If I knew that the drug would help me and I would be done with this, I would take it. And I have taken antibiotics in the past for tick-borne illness. This time around, I'm trying not to do that because I don't think that the antibiotics give lasting cure. The thing that gives lasting cure, we have to make sure we continue to emphasize this. The thing that gives lasting cure is lifestyle. You want to make your body a place that is inhospitable for the organisms. And how do you do that? By reducing stress, by getting lots of sleep and rest, by doing exercise to tolerance. And I have to, every day I have to wake up and go, should I get on the bike? Should I not get on the bike? Yesterday was no, don't get on the bike. Because on the one hand, getting on the bike is going to move my lymphatics in my circulation, and it's going to heat me up, and it's going to kill some spirochetes and maybe kill some cat scratch disease buggies. On the other hand, it can be too much for me and exhaust me and cause too much breakdown of those microorganisms, dumping endotoxins into my system and making me feel lousy. So I have to decide how I'm feeling on a given day, and do I have some space on the other end to manage the breakdown if I don't, if I do have symptoms. So I am doing yoga pretty much every day unless I really don't feel well. And if I'm feeling kind of icky but can do yoga, I'm sticking with yin yoga and gentle stretchy yoga. And then if I'm feeling better, then I'll take a class. I'll take a full vinyasa kind of class. And I don't do any more intense than moderate. No hot yoga, no power yoga, nothing like that. And I haven't been walking as much because I've been relying on the bike and I'm feeling like, and it's been really cold out. And so I may get back to walking. We'll see. But I want to try to get back on the bike and use the bike as a way to sweat it out. The other thing that I'm doing is taking the Epsom salt bath. So every day, especially on days when I don't have patient care days are just so stretched out. It's hard to get in the bath when I get home. Because if I get home, especially if I get home late, if I don't get home too late, then I can do a bath. But I'm doing baths definitely on days when I don't see patients, and I just get in the bath for 20 minutes and that's it. And I figure that's enough. Although I am planning on Sunday coming to go to Yona Quiet Corner Float and get a float. And so I'm going to do that for now. We're going to see how that works. They have infrared sauna over there. And infrared sauna, I'm interested in the infrared sauna because I know it can kill spirochetes. Nervous about it because it can kill spirochetes, so it can give you a herx. And I'm so tired of, like, getting symptoms. The other thing is that the symptoms I have been having, I have been getting tremors, but the tremors are more localized and manageable, and I can do things to calm them down, making it so that I'm still able to work, which is great, and I'm able to get through a day. So that's very good. So that's why I'm thinking that we're progressing, but it's slow. And I have only been on this Buner protocol for like 3 weeks. So the specific herbs that are going after Bartonella that I'm taking are Japanese knotweed. Japanese knotweed will go through, it'll go after Lyme disease as well. And so I'm taking Japanese knotweed. I'm also taking a resveratrol, a concentrated resveratrol pill. And I'm also taking Hotunia. And Hotunia has been studied to be helpful for Bartonella, as is Cryptolepis. And Hotunia, I'm not so sure about Lyme, but Japanese knotweed and Cryptolepis both can go after Lyme disease as well. So they're kind of a twofer. And the neat thing about Cryptolepis is Cryptolepis can go after persister cells. That's the concern about taking antibiotics. When you take antibiotics, they're very powerful and specific, and they'll go after active forms of the bacteria. So these bacteria have a few stages of growth. So they have a growth phase, and when they're at the growth phase, they're at the most they're the most vulnerable to antibiotics. So that's when they're rapidly dividing. 2 becomes 4, 4 becomes 8, 8 becomes 16. 16 and 16 are 32-inch worm. Right. Oh, so boy. So they keep that. That's the growth phase. Then there's a stationary phase where they're running out of nutrients, so they can't keep dividing, so they slow down. Then you have the L form, and the L form will be intracellular. That's for Lyme disease that has an L form, and that's a little harder to get, and it hangs out inside your cell. And then there's the cyst form, and the cyst form is where they make a coating around them that is impervious to antibiotics, but not necessarily impervious to herbs that go after persister cells, as well as antifungals. And some doctors will give antifungals. There's another neat product which I'm nervous to try but I don't know. There's some issues with it, but that's methylene blue. And methylene blue you can get online, but the recommendation is really you have to get a good source of methylene blue from a compounding pharmacy. Methylene blue is used for a condition called methemoglobinemia, and that's when you have an issue with, you have a hemoglobin issue where you don't release oxygen into your body. Your red blood cells don't release their oxygen the way that they're supposed to, and methylene blue can help to release that oxygen. So methylene blue will kill Lyme and Bartonella. So if you have that combination, methylene blue is a good way to go. I have to research if I can get a hold of methylene blue, what methylene blue I can get my hands on, and if I really want to do it. The thing with methylene blue is it turns stuff blue, like your tongue and your pee and your toilet. And so there's a blue stain issue. So your urine turns blue when you take it, it can stain. So, if we decide that that's something that I want to try, we might try it. But I have to find a source of it. So I don't know if I'm going to do that. But it is known to be gentle and not have a lot of side effects and to go after both Bartonella and Lyme, which is what I have. So we're thinking about that. And if you out there have experienced methylene blue, let me know. I've got Craig talking about how massage helped him. I'm nervous to do massage because in the past I've done massage and massages make me herks. It makes me get more symptoms because I've got something hiding in my muscles. And when I do the massage, it releases them and then I get symptoms. And what does massage do? It stimulates the lymphatics. So on the one hand, it will release the microorganisms from the lymphatics. But on the other hand, it can make you have a Herx reaction. Craig also mentioned sauna. So infrared sauna, absolutely. Infrared sauna is also helpful, but you have to be prepared that you could have a Herx reaction and you have to do all the things to help with that. And then he says vitamin B12. My vitamin B12, I had a test not too long ago. I was a little light in the B12. The recommendation, I'm reading Marty Ross, who is a functional medicine doctor who treats Lyme disease. And he talks about how vitamin B12, you should sit at least 540 picograms per milliliter. And I was sitting in the 400s, so I started taking a few vitamin B12 a few days a week. And Craig mentions cat's claw and Japanese knotweed, which I'm taking. And those are definitely things that I'm taking. And so my herbal concoction has a lot of stuff in it. And they're things that have multiple functions. They're antifungal. So apparently Lyme disease can hide inside of fungus too. So I'm taking Sweet Annie, Artemisia annua. That's one of the herbs that I'm taking. Definitely the Japanese knotweed. Japanese knotweed and Chinese skullcap are really good bases for whatever you've got pretty much in terms of tick-borne illness. And then you add to that based on what else is going on. And so I've got the cat's claw. I've got the, cat's claw, and I'm doing kudzu, which I'm excited about. Kudzu is more for neuroprotection. Japanese knotweed also engages in neuroprotection. You take that and it gets into your brain, so it helps to protect your brain from more neurological stuff. So I feel like I'm on the right path. And then, of course, then there's the things you do to improve detoxification. So let's talk about detox. Now, if you look at a lot of what MDs talk about, they talk about how detox is not something you really need to promote. That detoxification is something your body knows how to do anyway. And that is true. That's true. Your liver and your kidneys and your lymphatics do know how to do detox. But the problem is when you are treating tick-borne illness, you have these buggies that are being killed and they're dumping endotoxins into your system. The body can get overwhelmed with those endotoxins depending on what's going on. So attending to improving emunctory function is a good thing in my estimation. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have to take a supplement to do that. I mean, if you just want general detox, there are basic things that you can do. And those basic things include things like getting rid of things that back up your liver. So stopping sugar and refined flour and too much alcohol and too much stress. And just making sure you're eating things that do stimulate your liver, like beets and carrots and lemons and limes and grapefruit seed extract, or grapefruit, I should say, and drinking lots of water, and then taking herbs that help to push the emunctories to function better. So this glass that I have has a lemon. The lemon is squeezed, and then it's sitting in the glass as well. So it's imparting more lemony stuff into the water as it's sitting here. This has berber and pinella in it. So berber is an herb that helps to push the liver, lymphs, and kidneys to function better. And then pinella is a brain nerve cleanse. So you can take this in a single dose throughout the day. And it's also fine to simply put it in your water and sip on it all day. And so this has berber and pinella, has lemon, and it has some electrolytes in it in case I get sort of lightheaded symptoms, which you can get with these neurological conditions. So I'm sipping on that all day. I'm drinking lots and lots of water. So the controversy is that you don't really need any extra help in detoxification. I take exception to that when you're fighting tick-borne illness, that those endotoxins, if they dump into your body and you're functioning suboptimally. Now, I mean, a lot of people are going to get Herxheimer. Some people don't get Herxheimer reactions. It just depends on how flush their liver is, how much stress they have, what they're eating, and so many things. But most people, if they're coming in and they have symptoms from long-term tick-borne illness, they probably have some compromise. And so it bears well to help to assist them with that compromise. And so when we assist with that compromise, there are a lot of things that we do. And so the actual toxins that we're targeting are basically the endotoxins. When you do an antimicrobial and you break down the microorganisms, it's going to dump its endotoxins into your system. And then you have the chance that your system is going to get overwhelmed with those endotoxins. So you need to escort them out. Those endotoxins tend to be positively charged. Things that are inflammatory tend to be positively charged. So you impart negatively charged items into your system to help to carry them out. So the thing is, too, one of the things I'm taking is modified citrus pectin. And modified citrus pectin will grab onto a lot of stuff. It's negatively charged. It'll grab onto endotoxins. It will also grab onto heavy metals. Who knows if I have heavy metals in me? I haven't been tested for that, but I could be having heavy metals pulled out of me. I've been exposed to the world for 60 years. It is a possibility. We did a test on Ron a few years ago, and he had lead and mercury on board. Because he'd had exposures to these things. He'd had lead because he used to paint houses. So he got exposed to lead paint, we assume. And
we can go way back in time to when gasoline had lead in it.
Right. And then you were
pumping gas. For my dad at the gas station.
That's right. And didn't you used to wash your hands with gasoline to get the grease off?
We washed auto parts with it, yeah.
You washed auto parts with gasoline, right, which is just awful. So, So we're looking after those endotoxins, So we're looking after those endotoxins, and there's a lot of things that we're looking at. So Lyme, we're looking at the heavy metals, endotoxins from bacterial breakdown, and also excess cytokines. So when you dump those endotoxins in, you're going to get increased inflammation. So the basic thing, when you're treating Lyme, what you're doing is you're enhancing detoxification, you're reducing inflammation, and you're doing antimicrobial things. Those are the basic ways. And you have to do all of those things. You can't do just one or the other, generally. Although there's some people choose to just do the detoxification piece. I think that these buggies are so noxious that it's a good idea to do antimicrobial stuff too. So when you have symptoms from bacterial breakdown, that's called a Jarisch-Herxheimer reaction. So the Jarisch-Herxheimer reaction is, I have some notes to talk to you about. It's a symptoms you get from die-off. And it can happen when you address bacterial, fungal, parasitic, and viral infections, and it can cause a lot of unpleasant symptoms, and it can make it hard to stick with a treatment protocol. And on the other hand, if you're having a Herxheimer reaction, you are probably doing the right thing. You're being effective in terms of your treatment. And so there are things you can do to address the Herxheimer reaction. You can get a fever from Herxheimer reaction. I don't have fever, thank goodness. And some people get skin lesions back. And the Herxheimer reaction was first identified in treating syphilis, because syphilis, like Lyme disease, has stages, and it's also a spirochete. It's that spiral kind of bacteria. Herxheimer reactions can last for a day, and they can last for 72 hours, and they can go away. And in my experience of this treatment, they're coming and going. They can be headache, brain fog, fatigue, body aches and pain, rashes, GI symptoms, fever and chills, changes in mood, increased irritability, and it can also be, in my case, it's going to be tremors, because that's one of my symptoms. So, and so, as we said, it's caused by the death of the pathogen and the inciting of inflammatory immune reactions. So, it releases these toxins and cellular products, or bug guts, into the host, which creates a pro-inflammatory immune response to clear the infection and increase toxic load. We have detoxification elimination pathways, the GI tract, the lymphatics, the liver, the kidneys, the skin, but they can become sluggish if you have a chronic infection. This is why you have to do things to enhance detoxification. So what you do when you have a HERX is you do elimination diet. You get don't eat so much sugar and caffeine and refined flour and alcohol. You want to get out of the way of the liver so the liver can do its job. The liver and the kidneys, you want them to be able to do their job. And these foods, you know, if you do refined flour and sugar, it can feed the microorganisms, and if you cut them off, they're more likely to die. And if you take probiotics, that can help you to inhibit the growth of pathogenic organisms, which I'm doing, taking probiotics, eating yogurt. Sometimes I drink kombucha, and I have this kombucha in the fridge. I should drink it. Mm-hmm. And it can occur with the initiation of a protocol for any type of infection. And chronic infections are more likely to cause die-off symptoms because you might have an increased pathogenic load. You help with the liver, you help with liver detox, both phase one and phase two. You help with kidney function, and one of the simplest ways to help with kidney function is L'Chaim. Water, water, water. And yeah, you pee all day, but you know what? But like my friend Noreen Wallace says, better out than in. You can get tested for toxins. There are companies that will test for toxins. I don't know how necessary that is because, you know, if you're just doing basic things to detoxify and you're getting better, you don't necessarily need to do that. But you can. There are companies that will test for toxins in your urine. There are various ways to manage the die-off symptoms. A good diet. There are supplements that will do it. Activated charcoal, for example. So I'm going to go back here and talk about the different things that you can do. So doesn't your body have its own way of naturally detoxifying? Here's an article from Johns Hopkins University explaining why a formal liver cleanse is not necessary. However, it's my feeling that if you are treating a microorganism that can cause a Herxheimer reaction, such as a tick-borne illness, other bacteria, systemic candida, or parasites, you need your liver and kidneys to function optimally. Consuming processed foods, refined sugar and flour, too much alcohol, and too much caffeine, especially if you're a slow metabolizer, can reduce the resources of your liver, kidneys, and lymphatics. This can lead to a backlog of endotoxins from the breakdown of microorganisms and more symptoms. Some people have these reactions while treating their infections, and some don't. We're running under the assumption that when I get an increase in tremors, it's a Herxheimer reaction. So Herxheimer reactions especially can occur while treating tick-borne illness. Our hypothesis is that right now when I have the increase in tremors, it's a Herx, and here's how I'm dealing with it. So Craig mentioned this too, Epsom salt baths. So Epsom salt baths are a little bit controversial because the idea is that they're drawing toxins out of your body. They may or may not be. They definitely make me feel better. So I get in an Epsom salt bath. After I'm done the bath, I feel a lot more relaxed and calm. The magnesium and sulfate in Epsom salt baths can support liver detoxification pathways. It's controversial as to whether the magnesium and sulfate are actually absorbed into the body. There certainly is a relaxing effect of the magnesium as it touches nerve endings in the skin. If there is some absorption, the magnesium is a cofactor for numerous detoxification pathways, as well as for the neurotransmitter serotonin. So why not just ingest some magnesium? Good thinking, Robin. I'm doing that. So I'm taking magnesium, taking about 400 milligrams a day of magnesium orally, plus I eat nuts and seeds and leafy greens, which all have magnesium in them. So I'm getting a bunch of magnesium on board, and I'm not taking enough magnesium to give me loose stool, so I'm absorbing it all as far as I know. So if there's some absorption, we talked about that, this will tend to further support detoxification. Immersing yourself in any kind of water increases hydrostatic pressure against the blood vessels, improving circulation and hastening detoxification through the kidneys. The other thing I'm wondering is, now, when I'm in a bathtub, the bathtub, I'm not sure how many gallons go into a bathtub, that, like in the bath that I'm taking in a normal bathtub. I'm putting 2 cups of Epsom salts into the tub. And so if that is a, if that, that may be a hyperosmotic solution. And so you know that osmosis occurs when you have an area of high concentration and an area of low concentration across a semipermeable membrane. So the semipermeable membrane would be my skin. And let's assume that the magnesium is a hyperosmotic solution. So what's going to happen is water from my body is going to leave through my skin to try to reduce the concentration of magnesium ions that are in the magnesium and sulfate ions that are in the bathtub. So being in a hyperosmotic solution can be helpful. Now, we're not clear if that concentration in a, just a 2-cup ordinary standard bathtub is going to be a hyperosmotic situation. It probably is, but it may or may not be. Certainly, I get prune fingers when I'm in the tub. I sit in the tub for 20 minutes. I get prune fingers, and the prune fingers is happening because I'm having some osmosis. Some of the water from my body is leaving, and we're hoping that it's carrying some toxins with it. So the magnesium, especially the sulfate. The sulfate, the magnesium is positively charged, but the sulfate is going to be negatively charged. So it's going to help to draw some toxins out of my body. And the other thing that I'm doing is I went and got body scrub and body wash with Epsom salts in it. So on days when I can't take a shower, I'm getting some Epsom salts on my skin anyway. So I recommend that. You can either buy Epsom salt body wash or scrub. I don't know if you can get Epsom salts in a bar soap, but I definitely have a scrub and I have a body wash that I can use in the shower. You can buy ones that already have Epsom salts in them. You can also choose your favorite liquid body wash. And if you're very particular and you want something that's very natural, you can get a very natural liquid soap and put some Epsom salts into it. And I would say that if you're going to put it into a bottle, you're going to be looking at maybe a tablespoon in 8 ounces of liquid. And then you shake it up and it'll eventually dissolve. And then you use it as a body wash. You can use a puff and wipe it all over your body and you'll get some Epsom salts just in the shower. So I'm, you know, I will take my bath and then sometimes I will take a shower afterwards and I use the body wash for that. So I've got some Epsom salts going all the time. And then there's lemon. See, lemon. Lots of organic lemons in the house. So now we're just keeping lots of lemons around. Adding lemon to water can be an easy way to stimulate bile flow and provide antioxidants that support various liver enzymes. So lemons are going to have both vitamin C and bioflavonoids, and they're both helpful for this. Lime will function similarly, as will grapefruit. Be careful of excessive grapefruit, eating the fruit or drinking the juice daily in quantity, as it suppresses phase 1 liver detox and effectively increase the dosage of drugs that are detoxified through that pathway. However, if you go through a few days of having grapefruit, don't worry about it. I mean, if you're chugging 16 ounces of grapefruit juice every day, that could be a problem for your phase 1 drugs and your phase 1 detox. I have a grapefruit in the house that I'm going to cut up, and I'm probably going to spend several days squeezing it into my water. I'm not going to worry about my phase 1, and I'll probably do lemon too, so because I'm just pushing detox in so many ways. Then there's Alka-Seltzer Gold. Alka-Seltzer Gold is interesting. I tried some and did feel a little better right away. It's supposed to alkalize the body, helping to calm down. I mean, Alka-Seltzer in general is something that you use to neutralize stomach acid. And I've been very fortunate that right now, the only thing is the binders, which we'll talk about in a little bit. The binders tend to slow down my digestion a bit, between the chlorella and all the other things I'm taking. So I have to do things like make sure I'm eating a lot of fiber and doing a lot of yoga, doing twists and doing malasana, which is the yogi squat, and to help move things along. And of course, drinking lots of water is going to help with that too. But the point of Alka-Seltzer Gold is it's an easy, quick way to get alkalizing agents in. Inflammatory compounds tend to be acidic. So the idea is you get some Alka-Seltzer Gold on board and it does some neutralizing. I'm not sure how much of it gets into your system, but you definitely feel better when you take it. The difference between Alka-Seltzer Gold and OG Alka-Seltzer is that Alka-Seltzer has aspirin in it. And so Alka-Seltzer Gold doesn't have aspirin in it. It's harder to find. Ron went to 3 stores to look for it for me and didn't find it, right?
Correct.
Right. So I had to order it online. So there are other ways to do this. I'm not saying that you must get Alka-Seltzer Gold, but Alka-Seltzer Gold is a classic for Herxheimer reactions. So I bought some. I thought I would try it. And it doesn't taste wonderful because you put 2 of the tabs and they fizz. You put it in water and it tastes kind of salt. It like tastes like strong club soda. That's what it tastes like. But then you go and you squeeze a bunch of lemon into it and then it's not so bad. And then you drink it down. And if you're feeling like my thing is I feel lightheaded and twitchy, and I feel like that, and the place that my tremors seem to be happening now, there it seems to be focused in my left shoulder blade, and it translates to my weakness in my arm and weird feeling in my hands, and sometimes it gets twitchy, and so when that's going on, then I'm not feeling as good, and so I might take the Epsom salt baths take the Alka-Seltzer Gold, and I'll find that I feel a bit better quickly. So that's really good. So what it has, so the ingredients in Alka-Seltzer Gold, no aspirin, no nothing but the alkalizing agents. It has anhydrous citric acid and citric acid, so I'm not going to be getting any kidney stones because I'm pushing the citric acid, and also potassium and sodium bicarbonate. And as I said, since this round of increased symptoms, I would have nausea when back in September when I was having symptoms, I was having nausea and not having that anymore. No migraines, no headaches. That's why I'm thinking I'm moving along, because the symptoms are more localized and they're not as systemic. They're still sort of systemic, but they're not as bad. No headaches, no neck pain, unless I lie in a weird position and get stiff. But the big thing is just random tremors that come and go, and feeling just a little bit off. And so taking the Alka-Seltzer Gold, it can be helpful. And you can also try you can also just get baking soda. You can try a teaspoon of baking soda in water. And again, you can add your citrus to it, your lemon, your lime, your grapefruit. You could probably add orange to it too. I'm not sure. I don't tend to want to add orange. I would add orange for flavor, but the grapefruit, lemon, and lime are bitter. And because that bitterness is good, the bitter principles will push your bile more. So there, I feel like the bitter principle is going to help with your digestion more. It helps you stimulate you to make more hydrochloric acid and also to stimulate more bile flow, which is what you're looking for. You're looking for the liver to be more active to get rid of some of these buggies and toxins and stuff. Then there's good old glutathione, especially liposomal. So glutathione is a detoxification pathway in your liver, and you can take extra of that. And there are some that say when you're feeling herxy, to take extra glutathione. Take your Alka-Seltzer Gold and follow it with some glutathione. Liposomal is going to get in better. I don't have liposomal. I have just I have spray, which is supposed to get in very well. So I take that at least once a day, and then I have pills. I also have separate phosphatides. So the thing that I have liposomes separate from the glutathione, so I could take them at the same time and it'll help to drive it in. I might try that today. I haven't tried that. So glutathione, you can take glutathione on its own, especially liposomal. You can also take agents to help you to build glutathione, which I also do. So I take a good 200 milligrams of highly absorbable to 2000 milligrams of highly absorbable vitamin C in addition to whatever I'm getting from all the lemon that I'm eating every day, and lemon, lime, grapefruit. So I'm getting vitamin C that way, and also N-acetylcysteine. N-acetylcysteine and NAC and vitamin C are building blocks to the glutathione. Then there's binders, and you have to do your best to take binders away from your supplements and any food that you're taking. If you take it with food, the food will interfere with the effectiveness of the binders, because the binders are going to try to bind up the food that you're eating. So you'd have to do your best to take them at least an hour before a meal or 2 hours afterwards. Same with supplements, because they'll bind up the supplements that you're taking too. But binders can make you feel better. The only thing in my experience is, again, you have to make sure you're eating a lot of fiber, because binders will slow your digestion down a bit. Chlorella is not too bad. So anyway, let's talk about the different things. One or 2 hours before other medication supplements. Eat lots of fiber. The compounds in binders, once again, tend to be negatively charged and so will bind to positively charged toxins, such as the endotoxins from tick-borne illnesses. While having excess tremors, I've taken different doses of binders. Binders can contain the following. One of them is zeolite. Zeolite is a clay, and it has aluminosilicates in it. It has a box-like structure that absorbs and adsorbs, which means absorption means that it sucks the toxins inside its structure, and adsorption means it attaches to the structure to help to escort it out. So zeolite does that. It absorbs and adsorbs positively charged compounds like the endotoxins and heavy metals. I had a mom come in who had a kid in the spectrum, and a lot of parents with kids in the spectrum, they have difficulty getting their kids to eat healthily. These kids will refuse food, and they'll refuse healthy food, like they'll refuse to eat vegetables to the point where they're eating it and they're gagging on it, and they refuse to eat it. And so I feel so bad for these parents, because they're trying to give their kids something healthful to eat, and the kids are really attached to their highly reinforcing foods and won't eat something else. So they wind up having dysbiosis, and they wind up having increased candida and yeast infections and stuff like that. And so this mom gave her kid zeolite just in a spray, and it really helped him. The kid felt a lot better. His behavior calmed down. So the zeolite could have been bonding to a lot of things. It could have been endotoxins from his dysbiosis, from candida, and it could have been also heavy metals. Activated charcoal is going to be an ingredient in a lot of binders. Also negatively charged, and attaches, it adsorbs, it does the same thing. It adsorbs and absorbs to positively charged compounds. Got to be careful with that, because anything that's in you, it'll just take it right out. Then there's aloe vera. So aloe vera can be found in binders. I have aloe vera. I take a supplement that's just for digestion, and I think that's one of the things that's keeping my gut healthy. And it has aloe, slippery elm, marshmallow root, and deglycerizinated licorice. So I take aloe in that supplement every day, and I think that's protecting my gut. But binder compounds will often have aloe in them as well. So I'm getting, when I take a binder that has aloe in it, I'm getting aloe that way as well. You can also drink aloe juice if you want to. It's pH balancing, helps to absorb mycotoxins, which are often present in long-term tick-borne illnesses. Then there's special MMST silica, which works similarly to activated charcoal, as does apple pectin. And so those can be found in binders as well. Then there's fulvic acid. So fulvic acid comes from humic acid. Those are the soil acids. And there's I don't know if you call it an herbal supplement. It's a kind of clay, I suppose, or kind of dirt called shilajit. And it's used in Ayurvedic medicine. And shilajit has fulvic acid in it. And it bonds to negatively charged toxins. And also has immune boosting and anti-inflammatory properties. And that's going to be in your binder as well. And then there's good old modified citrus pectin. So pectin by itself is a fiber. So it's going to run right through. So if you just take apple pectin, the apple pectin will absorb and bind to toxins as it's going through you, but you're not going to absorb it. Modified citrus pectin has been modified in such a way that you actually absorb it. So it's going to get into your blood, and it's going to run around and take care of toxins that are in your blood. It especially binds to mycotoxins and heavy metals, and also can help to prevent Herxheimer reactions. I'm taking 15 grams of the stuff a day. It's not completely protecting me from Herxheimer reactions, which is a bummer. So I have to take a lot of other things. So when you take binders, as I said, it's very important to keep drinking plenty of water. And again, you can do plain water. You can dress up your water with your citrus, your lime, lemon, or grapefruit. You can do those like things like berber and pinella, which are constantly detoxifying. And then electrolytes. And I wonder, too, if one of the reasons that Alka-Seltzer Gold makes you feel good is you're hitting yourself with electrolytes very quickly, a bunch of electrolytes, and that's just helping you absorb water really quickly. I that may be one of the ways it works. The idea is that it's being absorbed and the negatively charged ions are going around and sopping up inflammatory compounds. But it can be remarkable. The first time I took it, it was like, whoa, I feel pretty good right away. It's not 100%, but it's helpful. As we said, drink plenty of water, preferably lemon, lime, or grapefruit. It helps to keep things moving along. We talked about far infrared saunas, which stimulate nitric oxide production, which means that if you want to stimulate nitric oxide production, then you're looking at beets and beet juice. Beets, that's one of the ways that beets work. Beets also stimulate bioflow and improve circulation. The gentle heat can also kill spirochetes, but sometimes can induce a Herxheimer reaction. So I'm a little nervous to do the infrared sauna because of what might happen, but I feel like I want to try it. So I'm probably going to go over to Yono and give it a whirl. But next weekend, like I said, I'm going to do the float. I didn't talk about the float. Let me talk about the float. The interesting thing, now if you're talking about hyperosmotic, where we're wondering if the Epsom salt bath in the tub is enough to consider it to be hyperosmotic with respect to the body, the float definitely is. There's 1,100 pounds of Epsom salts in a float tank. So you're definitely in, I mean, it's such a hyperosmotic solution. It's like the Dead Sea. You get in it and you float. So if you can float in it, then it's definitely hyperosmotic. So again, it's not clear to me how much of that Epsom salt gets into your body. But there is going to be some osmosis that's happening. So there's going to be a drawing out of toxins. Mariah insisted, I said, am I going to give myself a Herx by taking Epsom salt baths? And she says, no, you're going to tend to feel better. And if it's a hyperosmotic situation, then it's going to tend to draw the toxins out of your body through your skin. And then you're going to tend to feel better. Certainly one of the things that happens is when you have inflammation, you get an adrenal response. Your cortisol goes up, your adrenal hormones go up, your epinephrine, norepinephrine go up. And when I have a hypercortisol response, that can bring on the tremors too. And so basic things that calm me down, like deep breathing or getting out of stressful situations or being a situation that makes me happy, actually calms me down. So last night I was concerned about going to a gathering. We had a bike club gathering last night where we had a nice potluck and I saw a lot of friends and hung out with people. And I had a nice experience. I felt okay when I was there. And then we came home and one of our friends came home and sat with us for a bit. And I felt better after that whole thing, that sometimes just hanging out with people that make you happy actually makes you feel better. So things that actually reduce your stress will calm your Herxheimer reaction simply because when you have increased adrenal hormones, you have more inflammation. So calming yourself down calms cytokines too. So just reducing stress in any way that you can is going to calm your reactions. It's tough for me because I still have to work and work is stressful. So I try to do my best at work. You know, I have the berber, pinella, lemon, and electrolytes at work and Alka-Seltzer Gold and binders and all kinds of stuff and try to rest in between patients as best as I can. Keep my food going, keep the fiber going. And then exercise as tolerated. It's great to keep moving as it's a great way to maintain muscle mass and keep circulation going through muscles, joints, and organs. Cardio exercise will heat your body and can kill spirochetes and other microorganisms. If you do it, it's also important to make sure to hydrate well, eat plenty of fiber, drink lemon, lime, or grapefruit water, take your Epsom salt baths as there's potential for a Herxheimer reaction. Gentle stretchy yoga, yin and restorative yoga can be great alternatives. Skin brushing, which I haven't done, skin brushing. This Ayurvedic practice can stimulate the lymphatics to carry out extra toxins. And so then there are the things that help to encourage detoxification herbally. We already talked about berber and pinella. Parsley from Nutramedics is another one. that can help to stimulate the liver, kidneys, and lymphs to work better. And you can eat the herb parsley. Maybe we should do some parsley in our food. Okay. Yeah. And milk thistle, of course. Milk thistle can stimulate phase one liver detox. And then, of course, chlorella. And chlorella is something I've been taking separately. It's another binder. Chlorella especially binds to heavy metals. But Mariah felt strongly that chlorella would be helpful for me with the breakdown of the endotoxins. And so, again, with the chlorella, you have to take it away from other items. And chlorella, I think, functions as a fiber as well, because it helps to release things through your bowel a little bit better. And so I'm appreciative of that. And felt chlorella is not terribly expensive either. And so you can find it if you want to find a good source of chlorella. It's something that you can take ongoing. You just, again, you have to treat it like a binder. So you have to take it a couple hours away from other supplements. And sometimes you just, if you're not feeling good, you just take the binder and don't worry about the fact that, you know, maybe an hour or two ago you took your herbs, and just take it. So that's why if I've recently eaten or have taken herbs and I'm not feeling great, I'll start with Alka-Seltzer Gold. And then if that makes me feel better, I'll wait a little bit before taking the binder. So listening to this, you're probably thinking, geez, treating a chronic long-standing tick-borne illness can feel like a full-time job. It's all true. it's not an easy thing to do. Yeah, so we did a really good job of talking about tick-borne illness and binders and all of the things that you can do around that. And the biggest thing is to try not to get discouraged, because, you know, you can figure this out. You can get the support you need to figure it out. It's probably not going to be forever. And if you continue to get symptoms, then you can keep going. And let's, see, so Craig, mentioned MAGT, and what I'm assuming that he means is magnesium L-threonate, which I also have, and I could be taking that too. I probably should take more of that, because that's something, magnesium L-threonate, as he said, it crosses the blood-brain barrier, and something you can take at bedtime to help you to relax and sleep. It helps with anxiety. It's going to help your nerves to be calmer. And he's also suggesting pulsing the herbs. But pulsing is a technique where you maybe take some herbs for a few days and then you take breaks. And when I'm very herxy and not feeling well, I'll skip a couple of doses, or I'll reduce the dose that I'm taking that day. Even Buhner said to do that. So I was reading through and I found out where Buhner was saying that. All right. So I think I gave you a lot of great information about that. We'll go back to talking more about healthy aging when we come back next week. And we'll also talk about, we're going to get around to talking about fat loss, because people are always interested in that this time of year. All right. So I'm going to let you go now. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcasts at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS stores, and WHUS.org.